The 2006 Sunstone Symposium Dallas presents Session 4, The Defense of Cain, an interactive musical play written by Eugene Kovalenko. Performed by Steve Eccles as announcer, Brigitte Kovalenko as reader, Eugene Kovalenko as Spim, the defense advocate, Martin Rogers as judge, Clifton Jolly as prosecutor, and Eugene Kovalenko as Cain.
Now the microphone is only for recording, right?
Yeah, but it's on right now. Or do you want to not have this instructional part?
No, that's
all
right. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
So just pick that up. Everyone has the first two pages of play, right?
Senator Valerie.
So,
thank you.
I just want to make sure that you have read the instructions to the audience for both the Act 1, which the actors are assembled, and Act 2, which will involve you. And I want to alert you that not everyone will receive what you hear with pleasure. There may be, and if you have responses of any kind, thoughts or feelings, please remember them, because we would invite you to put them in the form of a character of anyone that comes to your mind, whether it's scriptural or mythological or historical or whatever, and come and bring that character to the table in the second act. So you will be the main figures in the second act. And every second act has a unique performance. And so
point of order?
Yes.
Who stole my script? An out-of-towner, I'm certain of that.
Maybe right here.
Let's make sure the prosecutor has his...
Thank you.
We just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
Thank you.
All right.
Now I'm good to go.
So I will not read those two pages that you have. I've given you an alert. We shall begin now. Has everyone had time to read this? Okay. Maybe I'll read this to you, this first page.
Good idea.
As you experience Act 1, finding a just court, potential participants are asked to be alert to their responses. You will be asked to bring your responses in the form of characters of your choosing and have them speak in Act 2, the Great Human Family Round Table. There are no right or wrong responses, only the truth of what you personally think and or feel. At the end of Act 1, there will be 5 to 10 minutes, probably less than that, quiet time, and that is a good time to note your comments. The play, admittedly, touches a sensitive cultural and psychological nerve. Its objective is not only to identify and transform destructive emotional energy, but to suggest how that energy might be turned into creative directions. Most of us first project our own dark or unconscious and potentially destructive sides outside ourselves onto others before we can see it in ourselves. This is also true for social and political institutions. The play challenges individual responsibility and moral courage. It is a new twist to understanding the age-old tension between the individual and the establishment. It is a deeper look at the most critical social structure of all, the father-son relationship.
Ladies and gentlemen, old Father Adam, in many modern faces, has become master of an unstable world. Blind to his inner realities and preoccupied with his public image, he allows himself to be manipulated by ambitious wives. Claiming thus to be true and faithful, he piously rules in the name of God and law. oblivious to his part in the first great miscarriage of justice on record. So long as that injustice remains uncorrected, it repeats throughout the ages in infinite variations. Adam and the world he rules remain subject to sin, pain, and death. For millennia, Cain has roamed the earth as a vagabond, full of uncomprehending guilt and beset by misfortune. Surviving and evolving by the grace of God, he has finally learned his purpose and become strong enough to take his rightful place in the kingdom of God. Cain is now returning for justice at his father's table.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world of war. And there's no sickness, no toil, no danger in that bright land to where I go.
Well, 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 this doesn't seem like the Cain's ancient record. Is there something wrong here? Is this a case of mistaken identity? Or is there a mystery lurking that we do not understand, would do well to understand? It seems we have new friends to help us in our task. One is Spim, an advocate for the defense and friend of the court. He is about to appeal Cain's case before a judge who has a reputation for being tough but fair and honest. We also have Prosecutor, who is feared and respected for knowing the scriptures and common law. Let us listen in to how the court is preparing for Cain's return.
May it please the court, I am representing Cain, our brother, who long ago was unjustly treated and cast out from his father's presence. It is our belief that this action was based on hearsay evidence. Therefore, this judgment will not withstand a rigorous review of the scriptural record.
Hold on there, sir, and back up a bit. By what authority do you presume to address this court?
By special orders from the Cosmic Federation, Your Honor, because of certain judgment deadlines now facing your planet.
Whoa, wait a minute. Your Honor, that's a preposterous claim. Those are no credentials that we recognize.
We urgently request that you hear our appeal, Your Honor. There are incalculable consequences that will occur if this case is not heard at once. There's no time to lose. To reject our plea will waste precious time and force it to higher judicial levels.
Highly irregular. I wonder if you've been seeing too many science fiction movies. Explain yourself, sir, and do not presume to humor this court. What are these judgment deadlines?
Your Honor, it is my task to inform you that the Earth is a carefully designed nuclear time bomb, set to go off in the year 2012 AD, or 500,000 Kolob revolutions from solar time zero.
What? Well, that's outrageous, Your Honor. See here, Advocate, the court will not be mocked or trifled with. Surely you can be serious with such a bizarre and hysterical claim. Can't be serious.
Please control yourself, counsel, and kindly address this court. Advocate, what you are saying is unsettling. Are you really serious?
Serious, yes, Your Honor, but it needn't be frightening. There is a cosmic plan for defusing the bomb, but it will be close timing.
I'm still deciding your credibility. Do continue by explaining the Federation you speak of.
Gladly, Your Honor. Quite simply, our planet Earth is the Cosmic Federation's graduate school for planet managers. It was designed such that most of its inhabitants would not be aware of their greater purpose during most of their time here. This was for character testing purposes. Now is the time to awaken them.
I've never heard of such a thing.
The scriptural record speaks of this time and its attendant circumstances more than once, Your Honor.
Have you an example, counsel?
Certainly, Your Honor. At the time of his crucifixion and resurrection, Jesus appeared to many in this hemisphere and foretold of this present day.
And when that day shall come, it shall come to pass that kings shall shut their mouths. For that which had not been told them shall they see, and that which they had not heard they shall consider. For in that day, for my sake, shall the Father work a work, which shall be a great and a marvelous work among them. And there shall be among them those who will not believe it, although a man shall declare it unto them.
Ah, Your Honor, I'm slow but earnest. That is not a biblical reference.
I refer you to the prophecies of Isaiah, Your Honor. The 11th, 29th, 52nd, and 54th chapters. Also, the prophecies of Joel in the last part of the second chapter. Furthermore, the Apostle Paul referred to Isaiah's prophecies in his letter to the Romans. There are many others.
I will take this under advisement, Counsel. What do you mean by a plan for defusing the bomb?
The plan is this, Your Honor. Intergalactic volunteers, equipped with innate know-how, have been formed into diffusing task force teams and sent here to Earth on special assignments. Some are called Indigo Children.
This is well beyond my experience. What has this to do with appealing an ancient judgment?
If I may be allowed to establish my conceptual credentials, Your Honor, I will show how this has everything to do with the appeal. At this point, I am presenting concepts that I believe you will recognize, but which may lie below the threshold of your present awareness. I ask only an open mind and a little precious time.
All right, Counsel. You may proceed for now. However, be advised we are without precedent at this point. I am allowing your sense of urgency to walk on unexplored ground.
Thank you, Your Honor. To continue with the plan for defusing the time bomb, for more than the past 25 years, task force team members have been and are continuing to be beamed undercover into selected Earth families to be trained and to adjust to Earth conditions. As individual team members mature and awaken to themselves and then to their respective assignments, they move into new action relationships.
Your Honor, this is getting more and more preposterous and bizarre.
I am allowing unprecedented disclosures for the time being. Please continue, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Training becomes advanced as teams form into what might be called action crews. In such relationships, individuals learn efficient use of their respective talents and their metaphor dream internal guidance systems. At the same time that diffusing teams are learning to apply integrated dream team technology.
Back up a minute, Counsel. What is all this technology? Without competition, how do teams or crews work together or get anything accomplished?
Interaction with other teams or crews may be direct or indirect. Awakening, training, and action assignments are all coordinated through the internal guidance system of each individual by the Federation's Central Administrative Intelligence.
Your Honor, Advocate is leading us through a confusing maze into some modern-sounding mystical mumbo-jumbo.
Unprecedented territory, yes, but hardly mumbo-jumbo. What is this Central Administrative Intelligence of which you speak?
You might call it conscience, Your Honor. Conscience does not rely on the past or on tradition or on precedent. It is an inner state, an intuitive feeling that surfaces in response to outer events or conditions. It is a personal, subjective matter and something we might call private revelation. Our sensitivity to its promptings determines the quality of our action decisions. That is why teams and crews are always more than one individual. Overlapping subjectivities need objective checks and balances.
Your Honor, we don't need lectures on conscience and morality. Everybody knows what conscience is.
Advocate, please bring your remarks to a close.
Yes, Your Honor. The final objective to diffusing team training is for teams and crews to be able to respond to each other
in each practical exercise decisively and efficiently and effectively in present time with clear thinking and full emotional expression. Each crisis or problem is resolved as completely as possible in a given time frame, and results are measured in terms of satisfaction and harmony among all parties involved.
This all sounds fantastic. Why haven't I heard of such a thing before?
There was no need for you to know before now, Your Honor. Now is the time for you and the court, in general, to be tested.
And besides, it sounds crazy. But do not forget where you are, sir.
Confine your remarks to the bench, Mr. Prosecutor. However, Advocate, I must also say that you are approaching a contempt posture.
I do not mean to be impertinent, Your Honor. Only clear and efficient. My intent is goodwill and service to the common good. My colleagues and I believe that you yourself are a member of a diffusing team in the very process of this court procedure. It is time now for you to awaken to who you really are. It is time to explore and test old, rigid, and brittle attitudes.
Counsel, this is a hearing to test the merits for an appeal of your client and not a personal challenge to me. I warn you again, you are crowding your purpose.
My purpose is twofold, Your Honor. Your own judicial attitudes, as well as that of this court, are one consequence of the ancient judgment that we are appealing. I am risking your understanding.
Your Honor, defense is attempting to undermine the very authority of this court and mislead us with personal challenges. He has far overstepped the bounds of judicial procedure.
Your point is well taken, Counsel. Even so, we are nevertheless making an unprecedented excursion into new territory. Advocate, I'm asking this court's patience in considering that your challenge is one of attitude rather than authority. I hope you are not taking us over thin ice.
We are on solid ground, Your Honor, and thank you for understanding. Yes, we are challenging attitudes, not authority. You who have dreams, if you act, they will come true. To turn your dreams to a fact, it's up to you. If you have the soul and the spirit, never fear it, you'll see it through. Hearts can inspire other hearts with their fire, for the strong obey when a strong man shows them the way. Give me some men who are stout-hearted men, who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Oh!
Enough, Counsel. I will allow the challenge you propose. This court will hear your appeal. Where is your client?
Thank you, Your Honor. Our brother Cain is on his way at this very moment. We have been sent to prepare the way before him. May we proceed with a preliminary argument?
You may.
May it please the court, I propose re-examining the biblical account as it concerns itself with our brother Cain. There were no real witnesses to his alleged crime. All the evidence ever presented at any time in the official record has been hearsay.
Objection, Your Honor. This is blatantly untrue. My Mother Earth and herself and God himself, they were witnesses.
Kindly allow defense to state its case before you begin your objections, Mr. Prosecutor. Defense may continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Like Jesus, our brother was betrayed. And like Judas, he was set up.
Oh, come on. Who set Judas up?
I warn you, Counsel. Allow defense to present his case first before challenging it. Again, defense may continue.
Thank you. Unlike Jesus, however, Cain did not comprehend what was happening to him. Who specifically was his accuser? Who specifically came to his defense? Moreover, why has this matter gone unchallenged for so long?
This is all ancient history, Your Honor, and the subject of innumerable studies and decisions. It's all very tiring. These allegations seem, they're ridiculous, speculative, useless.
Your Honor, this case calls for re-examination of old, rigid attitudes. Modern Father Adam will eventually be able to return to the primitive, primeval garden only when he restores his son's inheritance as a final offering to the Lord in righteousness. Holy fire will then grace Cain's offerings when his accuser identifies himself and kneels at the altar.
Counsel, these are astonishing assertions. Surely you will be able to support what you are claiming.
Yes, Your Honor. The initial setup began when Father Adam refused Cain's sacrificial offering.
Objection. I mean, no disrespect, but I can no longer be silent. That is absolutely the most outrageous assertion that you've made yet.
Yes, Your Honor. Wait a minute.
Judge.
Counsel will refrain from further outbursts. The court is well aware that defense is shining radically new light onto an old dark subject. You will have ample opportunity to present counter-argument and cross-examine all witnesses. Do not interrupt again, or you will be properly censured. Continue with your judgment.
Excuse me. I want to go back one place.
Yes.
We missed one thing here. I'm sorry. Judge, counsel, those are astonishing assertions. Surely you will be able to... Right here?
Yes.
Yes. Right there.
Prosecutor.
No, is this one?
I'd be happy to do mine again.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Kind of stepped on it last time.
Sorry, right, let me start right here.
Right there, that's good.
Counsel, these are astonishing assertions. Surely you will be able to support what you are claiming.
Yes, Your Honor. The initial setup began when Father Adam refused Cain's sacrificial offering.
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel is willfully misleading and misrepresenting the scripture. It was the Lord who refused Cain's sacrifice.
The record is not clear here. Adam and Eve were cast out from the garden for transgression, that is, for willfully disobeying a commandment of the Lord, and thus cut off from the Lord's direct personal presence. In this new, isolated condition, Adam found himself alone as the first patriarch of his family and took for himself the place of the Lord in their lives. What was initially a divinely appointed position of stewardship now threatened to become a despotic usurpation of authority. What was once motivated by love eventually became motivation by intimidation. The change was gradual and subtle. Cain was brought up under patriarchal order, quite oblivious to these subtle changes in motivation. Adam was all the authority Cain ever knew. Thus, whenever, whether in love or in hate, to Cain, Adam was God.
Objection, Your Honor. I mean no disrespect, but I simply can no longer be silent. That is the most outrageous assertion I've ever heard.
Counsel will refrain from further outbursts. The court is well aware that defense is shining radically new light onto an old dark subject. You will have ample opportunity to present counter-argument and cross-examine all witnesses. Do not interrupt again, or you will be properly censured. Continue with your argument, Advocate.
Thank you, Your Honor. In refusing Cain's sacrifice, Adam felt a degree of power that he had not felt before his expulsion from the garden. He was able to manipulate his unsuspecting son by his patriarchal authority. It was, to be sure, a heady place, and we will see how it builds into a major injustice. This injustice gradually evolved as a consequence of an unchallenged and subtle shift from an initially caring paternal attitude. And here is my main point, Your Honor. Cain could not comprehend the rejection. He felt something was not right, but could not verbalize what it was. The record says,
Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. Adam then says to Cain, "Why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? And if thou doest well, shalt not thou be accepted?" That's step one. It is a conditional acceptance based on parental standards and perfectly in order. However, here is step two, the critical point, which is not in order. Adam goes on to say,
"And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door."
Here is the subtle threat that has tormented mankind for millennia, full of implied guilt. Adam had bought Satan's lie. And now, through a subtle shift in attitude, he now passes that attitude on to his son. It wasn't enough to say, "Son, that wasn't good enough, do it over." Instead, Adam had to add a threat. "If you do not well enough, you are guilty."
"Do you dare trifle with the sacred word of God, counsel?"
"I ask for open-mindedness, Your Honor. The scriptural record is indeed a sacred and honored account, the most precious document in our land. It is our symbol for truth and functions as a foundation stone in the building of our republic and in our way of life. This I have assumed. However, to make more of it than it is to make it into an idol."
"You know, this is simply becoming insufferable, Your Honor. Advocate is challenging the very base on which we stand. Censure me if you must, sir, but it is tantamount to blasphemy."
"Your Honor, I am finished with my initial remarks and will welcome prosecutor's rebuttal."
"Then please address counsel's objection."
"Gladly, Your Honor. To see the base structure in a truer perspective is to know its real strength. Let us not confuse a foundation stone with a cornerstone itself. The sacred record was written by mortal and fallible men as they personally experienced God and the powers of heaven. Their inspired writings are nevertheless limited by their own perspectives, experience, and comprehension."
"Objection, Your Honor. How long must the court endure such an outrage?"
"Overrule. I find no disrespect in advocate's argument. Kindly proceed."
"Thank you, Your Honor. Allow me to ask counsel a question in an area where he is well-recognized authority."
"Ask your question."
"Who wrote the biblical record called Genesis that we are now examining, and under what conditions?"
"Counsel, can you answer?"
"Well, I guess Moses, in his official position as prophet to Israel."
"Yes. And when was it written? During Cain's time or later?"
"Of course it was later."
"Yes, many generations later. And Moses was in fact centuries removed from the actual event and wrote his account from legends handed down from father to son or from prophet to prophet. It was an intricate historical process. Nevertheless, allow me to return to my main point."
"Your point is well made, counsel. Proceed."
"So it wasn't enough to give clear fatherly guidelines to Cain regarding his unacceptable sacrifice. Adam went beyond that and gave Cain the thought, learned from Satan, that he had somehow sinned for not doing well enough, a debilitating conflict. Cain was unable to verbalize his feelings or stand up to his father. Instead, says the record,
Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him."
"You see, Your Honor, there was no call for such a vicious action."
"Again, Your Honor, who is writing this account? Who actually saw the event? How do we know it was not an accident or self-defense? Cain was a farmer and unacquainted with combat. Abel, on the other hand, was a hunter and a shepherd. He was well acquainted with killing, both to protect his flocks and in preparing sacrifice. How do we know their conversations did not begin in a struggle to communicate brother to brother and then backfire from frustration, misunderstanding, or even freak accident? From the lack of evidence actually available, we can imagine an infinite variety of alternative explanations to account for it.
Your Honor, how can counsel presume so much with the sacred record? And besides, Cain confessed his crime.
No, Your Honor. He never confessed. He expressed confusion, bewilderment, and guilt. Not guilt from a crime, but from rejection. We have seen that Cain could not speak up for himself in the face of his father's disapproval, nor could he differentiate Satan's lie. Moreover, we have also seen how Adam was capable of sloughing off his own responsibility, both on Eve in the garden after the first forbidden act, and also by intimidating Cain by an unacceptable sacrifice. So far as I'm aware, Adam, whether ancient or modern, has never taken responsibility for his own capacity to err. He has yet to confess or repent of any wrongdoing. That is an attitude that continues to generate resentment, hostility, and injustice in all his descendants. It is an attitude originally learned from Satan.
You are being very hard on Father Adam.
Yes. However, my real intent is to bring light to a fundamental attitude and show how it can affect all subsequent actions. I believe that this can be done by calling Adam and the record into account and into harmony with the everlasting covenant of God's grace. Otherwise, Adam and his world remain locked in time and unclaimed by Christ's ultimate sacrifice for all mankind. The crucifixion satisfies the demands of an impossible law, and the resurrection conquered the threat that originally defeated Cain.
Oh, what's past is past. We're now in the present, Your Honor.
We can speak of time as if it existed, not in terms of clocks or of the rotation of our planet, but in terms of experience, a sequence of events or circumstances. The past affects the present and the future in such terms. That is the point of my defense, to effect a readjustment of ancient but fundamental attitudes in new light. Consider another of Adam's descendants and his responses to the Lord. I'm speaking now of Jacob, son of Isaac, grandson of Adam. Cain was no yes man, neither was Jacob. However, Cain was also no warrior. Jacob was. Cain lost the battle with his accuser in believing a lie. Jacob won his battle at Penuel, the place where he wrestled an angel. Cain felt fear and fled. Jacob felt fear, but held on to fight for a blessing.
Why is this relevant, counsel?
To show the character of God in the face of individual initiative and determination, Your Honor. At Penuel, the angel blessed Jacob with a new name, Israel, which means he who strives and rules with El, God. Jacob then acknowledged that it was God and not his own strength that had spared him.
Again, why is this relevant?
It is to identify Cain with a new attitude, Your Honor, one that God has used an example throughout history and the sacred record. Justice called modern Cain into the ranks of Israel. He has learned and grown in his wanderings over the millennia, and the Prince of Peace has taken away his guilt. Now he is returning for an accounting at his father's table. He has a new attitude, a new understanding, and a new strength.
Counsel, this is a challenge that our audience must consider. The court will recess for 10 minutes so that the respondents can take their place at the round table.
Well, 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 again, quite a different picture from what we're used to thinking about Cain, isn't it? Let all those who have evidence, assertions, objections, or further light and knowledge to take their rightful place at the great human family round table.
And
why does your adjourn for 10 minutes?
While you're collecting your thoughts and remembering any feelings and notions you might have, the judge will prepare for a instruction to the potential jury.
Ladies and gentlemen, the defendant Cain, found guilty of the crime of murder of his brother, Abel, is appealing that ancient judgment in this modern court. The issue before this court is whether Cain did kill Abel in any way. The court will briefly review this idea based on the evidence presented. One, first, Adam, standing in the place of God, rejected Cain's offering of sacrifice as unworthy, and his failure to produce an acceptable offering was an occasion for sin. Second, Cain, bearing a sense of sinful guilt, sought out his brother Abel, but no evidence had been introduced to explain Cain's reason for seeking Abel. Third, no evidence has been offered to show what transpired at the meeting between Cain and Abel prior to Abel's death. Fourth, it is alleged that Cain, a farmer, knew nothing of killing. Abel has been described as a hunter and shepherd, versed in the knowledge of killing. It is important for the jury to consider Abel's character as set forth by these allegations. There was quite a difference between a hunter and a shepherd. A hunter is aggressive as he seeks out his prey with the intent to kill. But a shepherd is passive, not aggressive, killing only in defense of his flock. It is alleged that the sacrifice on Calvary conquered the threat that first condemned Cain, that Cain is therefore a new man in any case. There was one last little thought that you may consider in your deliberations. The scriptural episode of Cain and Abel foreshadows our own American West in the 18th century, when the rancher, as embodied in Abel, sought free range for his herds, and the farmer, embodied in Cain, sought to fence in the land, plow it, and grow fruits and vegetables. Range wars were common before both farmer and rancher learned to live together. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, in the light of these new allegations in defense of Cain, you must find if Cain is guilty of premeditated murder in the first degree, or is Cain guilty of murder in the heat of passion? There was a moment of passion when Cain lost his temper, which would be second degree murder. Third, is Cain not guilty of murder as he defended himself against attack by Cain? Self-defense. By Abel, self-defense. And last, there is insufficient evidence. There may be insufficient evidence presented to show that Cain did not kill Abel. We have no witnesses to the act. So now, ladies and gentlemen, you may deliberate and raise your questions. Raise your answers and give this court your thoughts so that we may come to a just conclusion and a just verdict in this matter. Thank you. I shall hear any, the court will hear, entertain any ideas and thoughts. You are recognized, sir.
Okay. Come up there and stay here.
I think there are some other questions that ought to be resolved. Probably the primary question, Sean, is, first of all, if we're going strictly according to the scriptures, was there a law against murder at this time? There is no evidence that such a law has actually been given. And if no law has been given, how can he be held guilty of committing a crime? Because there was no law. He also establishes a type. We have the Jacob and Esau situation, where Jacob is the sheep herder, and Esau is the hunter, who are threatening each other's lives, or Esau is threatening his life. And going back to Cain again, if he was guilty, why did the Lord take strict measures to protect him? Why was a mark placed upon him if he was guilty, so that he would not suffer any penalty from his crime, if in fact he was guilty? So I think there is evidence to indicate that maybe he was framed. Maybe there is a question there.
The court would like to add one word on this matter. The subject was brought up that there was no law. I think that is probably true. The first law forbidding murder, I believe, was in the Ten Commandments, "Thou shalt not kill." And that came down from Moses long after Cain and Abel. A point well taken. Do I hear others? Do I hear other thoughts, other ideas? Please, everyone. This is a serious matter, and we would like to hear your views. Either counsel for the defense or counsel...
All I've really been hearing in this proceedings is, Daddy didn't love me the right way, therefore, you know, it's not my fault whatever I do, and that's the kind of, what kind of society would we have if people weren't responsible just because they got a bum deal with the way Dad treated him?
It was an interesting, the court will address that point, there was an interesting column in the paper this morning, in this morning's Dallas Morning News. On victimhood. And here we're, Cain may be pleading that he's the victim of no love from his father. It's a point to be considered. Do we have other points to bring up?
Can you identify yourself, ma'am?
Well, I am Mother Eve. And Cain, he's my child of sorrow. When Abel was born, Abel was beautiful. He was so beautiful to look at. He was a very harmonious child. Abel was just specially gifted. And Cain was jealous. He envied him. I tried to tell him he was sufficient, he was beautiful, but he was always jealous, envious, and if he had a sin, I guess, if he sinned, if there was something he was guilty of, it was envy. But that doesn't make him a murderer. I loved them both equally. And I know Cain had a good heart. He was so good with what he was doing. And he cannot be guilty of murder.
The court would like to point out that we now have a new possibility involved or entered into the record. Motive. Was Cain jealous? Something to consider. Any other views? Does counsel for the defendant or does the prosecutor have anything that you would like to add?
I'm going to get my lines right now. There is a strong tradition in the religious history that wherever brothers are mentioned for purpose, there is always strife and frequently murder. Laman and Lemuel and Nephi, Joseph and his brothers, Cain and Abel. One can search the scriptures to find the ideal family structure, much less anyone having family home evening. That's all I have to say.
History tells us, according to the prosecution, that brother and brother are usually enemies. They do not like one another. Yes, sir.
I am Satan, and I want to testify here. I was there when this whole thing started in the garden. I caused all the problems with Adam and Eve, and I was there when this took place. Now, Cain was as innocent as a newborn child. I put him up to it. I was responsible for it, so I think he ought to get off this rap.
Satan has made...
Oh, no, the devil made me do it.
Does counsel for the defendant have anything to add?
Oh, I've rested my case, sir.
You've rested your case?
I would like to speak.
I am Cain's wife. Cain was a good man. He wanted to provide for his family the things that they needed. And the only training he had was as a farmer, as one who grew things. He wanted the best for his family, and so he set aside the things which probably should have been set aside for sacrifice for his family and offered to sacrifice only the lesser things. Even though he knew, because he had been taught, that the best was supposed to be sacrificed to the Lord. So he felt, he knew that he was wrong, but he felt he was justified because he needed to support his family. I wasn't there when the conflict came about between him and Abel, but it was not a first-time thing. There had been conflict between them throughout their lives. Cain felt that Adam had a holier than that Abel had a holier than thou attitude, and that was him, and we raised our family. I don't believe he killed Abel out of anger, but maybe out of frustration. And I do believe that there was more to it than that. I don't believe he snuck up behind Abel and killed him. I believe there was a confrontation and there was some action on Abel's part.
Does anyone have a question on any of that? It is the wife talking.
Okay, you are Cain?
Nope. Yeah.
Okay, I guess whether you were acting in court, and Cain, I'd like you to tell the court what happened between you and Abel that day.
Well, he's still coming.
Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't come. Well, then, in that instance, I'll be the judge, and I say the statute of limitations prevents this case from being tried. Whether or not Cain was rightly condemned, you have been punished, and so since we can't try the case...
Well, I would remind the witness that in murder, there is no statute of limitations.
Double jeopardy.
Too many attorneys in the room.
Taking birth, honey.
Hey, where is our attorney? Did he leave?
Are there any other thoughts, any other ideas, any other points to be made? There's one.
I am Judas Iscariot. And I knew that, I feel that the scriptures are in error as well. I knew that my Savior had to die. And I didn't see anyone around me affording him the opportunity to make the great sacrifice in our behalf. And when we had our last dinner, he turned to me and he said, "What thou doest thou quickly." And I did. Just following orders.
Are there others?
I'm Isaac. It's all God's fault. God told my dad to kill me and then finally sent an angel down to stop him. I think God told Cain to kill Abel and he just failed to send the angel down in time.
Whoa! That's good. Does that mean we're all framed in some way?
Absolutely. No free will here. You can never cut a slice of cheese so thin without two sides, right?
Well, it looks like the energy's gone. Run its course.
I think so. If there is no further comments, no further deliberation, what is the, I would like to ask, by a show of hands, what is the verdict? Was Cain guilty or not guilty? Those who believe he was guilty, raise your hand.
Which crime?
Wait, you had
four crimes there for us when you read to us.
Well, first degree?
Was he guilty of first degree murder? Was he guilty of second degree murder? Was he guilty of manslaughter or killing in self-defense? Was he not guilty?
You're going down.
It is the verdict of the... It is the decision, the deliberation, after due deliberation of the audience, of the jury, that Cain was guilty of something. We haven't really.
No lawyer.
I think the largest showing of hands was guilty of murder in the first degree.
You can't do it because it's got to be unanimous, right?
It has to be a unanimous verdict. So we will declare a mistrial. Court adjourned.